Okay, so we are back to our question session. Are there any questions to Anatel? So my first question is when you mentioned about the reactor flux precision that it's not very well known. I've heard about building in the future mini reactors, mini nuclear reactors. And would that be something that could improve the knowledge of the reactor flux?
Actually, I haven't thought about that. I mean, it depends on how it works. I mean, the main problem with the reactors, let me just go back. Let me just stop these and show you this slide again to illustrate the point. The main problem with the reactors, let me summarize it in this way, is that unlike the sun, for example, I mean, if you consider, let me explain very quickly the sun. You have one basically interaction, I mean, the pp neutrinos, the pp essentially fusion, that gives you 99% of the flux of the neutrinos. If you understand that, you understand everything. And in fact, we're trying to understand the sun since a long time ago, and we understand that to the level of the per mil level. It's one interaction, and all the knowledge is about that one single interaction. There is all the interactions, but they are much smaller. Essentially, if you measure that, you are really seeing the luminosity of the sun. The problem with the reactors is that there are many contributions that is around basically like a 40 isotopes that they are competing one another in almost in the same range, and that some isotope, of course, are dominant with respect to the others, but at least you can say that there is a competition of around 10 or 20 isotopes that drive a lot of that, especially at low energy, there are even more in the isotopes. And the big problem is that to understand, you need to understand them all to understand the whole thing. You cannot just understand one. It's very hard. You really need to understand them all. And the other problem is that in the nuclear reactor, things are basically out of basically equilibrium. So things are happening in a very complex manner that is very hard to replicate. So it turns out that today's approach to measure the electrons and things like that is actually extremely hard. If you use another reactor, you still have the same salad of information. It's very difficult to deconvolve all this information, extremely hard, as a matter of fact. There is some information about the Q values in the spectra that you might be able to use, but the detectors typically don't have the resolution to do that. So making a long story short, maybe that helps you, but small reactors give you basically lower statistics very typically. And the question is whether you would be able, you might gain something, but you might lose other things. It depends on how these reactors work. And my apologies, I'm not familiar to the kind of reactors. And but I wouldn't be honestly a first order convinced unless there is a very detailed argument of how that would work. It's very hard physics. So I personally think that the only way to improve today this understanding is to do very, very precise measurements and with neutrinos. You have to give up on trying to understand the electron and then converting from the electron to the neutrino. And the reason for that is that the nuclear physics that is basically bridging the electron neutrino to the neutrino is actually extremely hard and very badly known. So even if you make a perfect measurement with electron, you cannot guarantee that your converted spectra with a neutrino is actually to the same level of precision. Worse, you don't even know what precision you might get out, unfortunately, because the conversion is less known than actually the data sometimes. So unfortunately, this is very hard nuclear physics, and I would say that this is today as good as we can get unless we really think of a completely new technique on that. And I could be wrong, and I hope to be wrong, of course, but I would be reluctant to believe that I'm wrong until, I mean, we looked into the details. I hope I answered.
Yes. Yes, that answered my question. Yes.
Can I
Thank
ask, I mean,
you.
on this topic though, I mean, I'm not a neutrino physicist, but I mean, is this understanding the flux? Isn't this why you build a near detector?
Actually, the opposite. We build a near detector because we almost pathetically, we realize that this problem is so hard that we put a near detector to bypass this problem.
Yes, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. You're measuring the flux using a near detector.
That's
So,
right. But
yeah.
this means you put this problem under the rug. The reality is that you just basically, what you're doing is in your near detector, you solve the problem for the far, but you never understood your problem in the near. Of course, with an ear, you are always getting some knowledge. You're absolutely right. I mean, by putting the detector itself, you're getting millions of events. So we're getting such a precision that we're improving on that. But unfortunately, the full rationale is essentially to acknowledge this problem is so hard that we are ready to pay a factor of two or more the cost of an experiment because it's just impossible to solve. Unfortunately. Now, if you want to do just theta 1-2 or theta 1-3, if you want to do just the mixing part, then that solution works. You use your near detector as you highlighted exactly, totally perfect. And you measure the relative difference that gives you your mixing term. Now, the problem is that you never understood your absolute flux term. And that right now is the most important term if you want to go beyond just understanding theta 1-2 and theta 1-3. So, you know, it's the usual problem that you always think that you solve a problem by bypassing it. And this problem always comes back just in a different way.
Sorry, can you summarize again what you mean by go beyond theta 1-2 and theta 1-3?
So for example, what I try to highlight, if you want to measure the unitarity, for example, of the matrix, which is something right now assumed, understanding theta 1-2, imagine to 1 per mil, understanding theta 1-2 and 1-3 to 1 per mil level both, you can make infinitely perfect measurements. If you don't understand your absolute basically reactor flux, you will not be able to test basically physics beyond the standard model in this way. And this is basically understanding the flux.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So another question that I had is that the liquid or techniques, as you said, is counterintuitive. So it's interesting how it originated. Do you know?
Yeah, I know very well. I invented it myself. So, I mean, I can tell you very honestly, it's desperation. As simple as that. I was
as is typical. Okay.
Totally. I mean, making a long story short, I mean, that was the holy grail. If you were able to see that this positron is there in virtue of its annihilation, as I showed to you before, this implies easily you can tell that this is not an electron or a single gamma or an alpha. An alpha is a proton, is a point-like, and the only problem you might have is a little bit with gammas. So it was absolute desperation. And the reason is that double saw has one of the most, the poorest actually overburdens for the theta 1-3 experiment. And I was driving the analysis and I was basically looking for the way, to find positrons. And I failed, honestly, I failed to solve it in double saw. But I now know why I failed, because in fact, I know in double saw or Juno or any experiment like is impossible. And I know how to do it, but that actually means liquid, or this means a completely different way to articulate the detection strategy. So I dramatically failed in double saw, but I think I've managed to make it work. Well, at least, we're in the process of still to make it work. Let me be more humble on that. But we think that we know this works. It would work essentially for this generation with liquid. And the byproducts, honestly speaking, are multiple, but that I'd like to say, I'd love to say that I foresaw them all. And the reality is that we've been discovering these as we go along, as time goes.
Okay, thanks. I was not sure, but now I know that you are the inventor of this liquid O detection method. And the other question I have is about the commercial production of such scintillators and whether that has also application in industry. That's a really good question.
Well, the reality is that these scintillators, actually, nobody knows how to do much of that, because very honestly, we've been for 70 years throwing to the garbage everything that was not transparent. And it turns out, it's ironic, that scintillation is actually a rather mundane process in nature. You can see scintillation in many materials. Actually, it scintillates a lot. But in neutrinos, in high energy physics in general, if it was not transparent, we just disposed it to a large extent. At least we thought it was not fully useful for our detector. Of course, plastic scintillators are not fully transparent and they are actually beautiful on some contexts. So essentially, right now, this comes down to a completely new field that we are exploring. What I'm doing right now for Liquido is using a traditional liquid scintillator that starts transparently, and that we are able to convert it, because this way we understand the scintillator very well. But the really holy grail, in my opinion, strategy, or if you like, is when you start really looking into completely different ways of doing liquid scintillators, opaque liquid scintillators, and then you might be able to do some things which are today beyond reach. And we are already looking into that, but that is our, call it, I mean, bleeding R&D, and we are already looking seriously into that. And this may imply, just to give you an appetizer, this may imply increasing the light levels by factors. And that implies big breakthroughs, if it was possible. But that is still super early, and we don't talk about it. It's actually very confidential at this moment.
Oh, yes, I understand. So, I guess we will hear in the future some more real measurements and see the proof that this technique works and can be applied experimentally.
Yeah, we're working into that.
Yes. Are there other comments or questions? If not, I think we can wrap up. And thank you very much again, Anatel. It was a great pleasure to have you at our seminar. And we hope to meet again. And good luck with your tests.
Thank you very much. Big pleasure for me too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, again, for joining. See you next time. Let's close the seminar and stop the recording.